So how and why, in the process of trying to convert the wealth of nations into reality, were Adam Smith's ethical and political concerns lost? Greed won, and societies were restructured along the logic of the market.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, March 8th, from midnight to midnight, as we celebrate International Women's Day with 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music, public affairs with a feminist focus, and female DJs playing all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th, from midnight to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Pan-African Film Series hosted by the All African People's Revolutionary Party. The film this month is The Fall of Libya, showing Wednesday, February 24th at 6 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 329. The Fall of Libya is a short documentary of the role of imperialism played violently and illegally overthrowing the democratically elected Libyan government in 2011. Again, that's The Fall of Libya, Wednesday, February 24th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 329 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. Again, that is 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Happening 2016, a homegrown music forum taking place February 27th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space in Portland. Happening 2016 will be an exploratory conversation about how the music scene works in Portland and how artists, professionals, and supporters shape the scene. Panelists include Simon Tam, Jenny Logan, DJ Cliff, and will be moderated by Rebecca Miller. Again, that's Happening 2016, a homegrown music forum taking place February 27th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space, 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It is 11:02, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Recovery Zone with host Stephanie Potter, who asks a panel of guests from local climate groups, what does it take to motivate us to bridge the gap between knowing and acting? This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW, G-R-O-W. And now, the Recovery Zone.
Hi, you're tuned to KBOO Portland, and this is The Recovery Zone, a show focused on healing our world. I'm Stephanie Potter. As most of us know, the scientists are telling us that we have just 10 or 15 years, and it seems like this 10 or 15 years has been going on a little while, but anyway, 10 or 15 years to change direction in terms of climate change, or we're in serious trouble. Temperatures are rising, and we're already experiencing things like droughts, flooding, and megastorms, but they say we need to stay within a 2 degrees centigrade increase if we're going to avoid the worst impacts. And there's a lot of people who know all this, but they're still standing on the sidelines. So today we're going to be talking about what it means to be an activist and what it takes to bridge that gap between knowing and acting. And we're also going to be throwing in some information on climate change actions taking place here in the Northwest. So I have in the studio with me here Harlan Schober, who volunteers with the Climate Action Coalition, and Maya Girard, who's of 350 PDX, and Paul Spindell, who's been involved with lots of different groups here in the Northwest and possibly has some commitment issues, he said, but he's all over the place. And if you like, you can call in with your questions and comments, and the phone here is 503-231-8187. And so I'd like to start just with each of you a little bit, like basically how you got involved, but basically how did you, where were you, or how did you first even know that there was a problem with climate change? And maybe we could start with Harlan.
Oh, okay. I'd have to say I've known there's a problem for a long, long time. We didn't call it global warming, but there was obviously a train wreck shaping up. But I'm very new to taking any action. I've been going to hearings and meetings and actions only for the last 2 years. And it's been very helpful to get off the dime and start showing up.
Uh-huh. And what was it that actually triggered? I mean, what was that pivotal moment?
I was talking with a friend who had gone to a Bill McKibben lecture. And she quoted him as saying to a range of ages in the audience that he was glad to see the students there. He was glad to see the elders there. And I understand he then looked more at the elders and said, you know, these folks here, the students, are committing to their careers. They're going for graduate degrees. They really can't afford an arrest record or jail time. It derails their entire path. But you old guys, what can they do to you? And that really resonated. That that was time to show up.
Yeah, and somehow the whole the reality of climate change just became too great for you in a way.
Well, it had been too great for me for quite some time. But mm-hmm. if it was somehow it just came together that this was something where I could show up. There were people to talk with, organizations to get involved with, and it's been. It's been a real boost to the morale.
Uh-huh. And Maya, like you're actually, like you're working at 350 PDX. This
yeah.
is your job.
Yeah.
So you're making a career of it. But what got you going on this? Was this like something since you were 5 years old even? Or?
Well, I grew up in sort of an eco-conscious family. I grew up in Vermont. And so it was acceptable in the culture there to care about recycling, and we composted, and once a year the state has a holiday where all the students go out with green trash bags and pick up trash along the sides of the road. So I've always had this sort of, it's okay to participate in taking care of the space around you, but I wasn't taking any action around climate until a friend of mine basically pulled together our entire group of friends and says, I've been working in this movement for 3 years. No one ever comes with me to the meetings. No one ever comes to the actions. You just like pat me on the back when I get back from doing some work. And so she just told us, you're coming to the next meeting. Cancel whatever plans you're doing. Put off your homework for an hour. We're all going to go sit down and have a meeting.
Wow.
And
this was still in Vermont.
No, this was here in Portland.
Uh-huh.
It was while I was in undergrad in school.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard to say no to your entire group of friends when they're sitting down to have a meeting, because it's fun, right? You get to hang out. And I was always curious what they were doing, but no one had ever told me to go, and I didn't want to, you know, each of my friends were doing their own thing, and I didn't want to seem like I was following any of them or that it was a trend and I was like going to fade in and fade out. So just having someone grab my hand and say, part of you wants this, just please try it,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
Was really...
And what about climate itself? I mean, like, was there like, what sort of made you realize that this was the issue you wanted to be part of?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was it what? I mean, what did you like really get charged up about that? Why?
Right, right. Well, for me, it came. I knew that I wanted to study environmental studies, mm-hmm. And I've known that for a long time, but. What shifted for me and why I've focused on climate more recently is that I went to this meeting and started learning about the concept of climate justice. And that for a long time I'd seen the climate movement and the environmental movement as it's led by the big green organizations in this country felt kind of hollow to me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of their branding and messaging is about clean spaces that are beautiful and that we love to hang out in. And it felt like there was a big piece missing for me. And I didn't want to be associated with the environmental movement as that sort of message that leaves out all of the people who
too yuppie almost.
Are so, yeah, it was really yuppie. And as soon as I started learning about all of the people who are being directly impacted by fossil fuel extraction and whose homes are already being flooded in the Philippines, it made a lot more sense to me, and I was able to take it on as I can associate with this.
Cool. And how about you, Paul? This is Paul Spindell. How did you decide to get involved in the climate movement?
I think it happened for me. You know, again, I got to move out here about 20 some odd years ago from the East Coast, and I got out here and went, wow, this place is beautiful. What would it be like to keep it that way? So it started there. But I think the big one for me is I've been involved with an organization called the Pachamama Alliance out of the Bay Area, which is, I guess I haven't had as many commitment issues since I've been with them now for about, you know, nine years or so. But
oh, that's a long time.
That's a long time. They have put out for a long time now a workshop called Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream.
Uh-huh.
And it's around environmental sustainability, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. And somebody sent me an invitation to go to one of those symposiums several years ago. And I went there, and there was one particular moment in there that kind of punched me right in the face. And it was a poem.
Okay.
That was read. In a video, and if we have time,
Why don't we just do that? Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to read that. It's by a gentleman named Drew Dellinger, and it's titled, "What Did You Do Once You Knew?" It's 3:23 in the morning, and I'm awake because my great-great-grandchildren won't let me sleep. My great-great-grandchildren ask me in dreams, what did you do while the planet was plundered? What did you do when the earth was unraveling? Surely you did something when the seasons started failing, as the mammals, reptiles, and birds were all dying. Did you fill the streets with protest when democracy was stolen? What did you do once you knew?
Yeah.
And for me, and even now, I mean, I've said that poem a lot in the last 9 years or so. It almost makes me cry every time because I know.
Yeah. And it's quite powerful. And so the whole thing then was that when you came back from that, you started doing stuff, right?
I started doing a lot of stuff. From leading those symposiums was what started. I am a teacher trainer by background, so doing those fit my niche of skill sets. So I started doing a lot of those, and through those I met a lot of other people, a lot of other activists in a lot of different arenas, and made a lot of friends, and enjoy, if you will, being part of this movement.
Uh-huh. And
I want to be able to tell my grandchildren that I did that.
That you did something.
That I did something.
And I think for a lot of us, this is about future generations, isn't it?
Well, yeah. No, not for me.
You are.
This is all about me.
Right,
point of order.
Right on.
Yeah.
Because, if you're looking at a world that's going to fall apart in 10 to 15 years, what would you be, like,
right.
40 years old?
I'm 25.
Right.
So when I'm thinking about, do I go back to school? do I have a career path?
Right.
That's, you know, real talk. I grapple with, is there going to be a stable economic system in 15 to 20 years when 3/4 of the world's cities are going to be underwater by 2050? And where are those people going to go? There's going to be like a lot of shifts in the next.
Well, there already are. I feel like the droughts in Syria and stuff are exacerbating the migrant crisis in Europe. And I mean, we're already seeing the start of this, right. You know.
And it's all related. I mean, you know, when somebody says, well, why are you focused on environmental things? You know, what about justice? They're all connected.
Totally.
They're all connected. And you know, we work on one, and we work on two, we work on three. They're all related. So.
But anyway, I'd like to take a little ID break here. You're tuned to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. And we're talking today about climate change and taking action. What keeps us stuck? What can get us unstuck? I'm speaking with Harlan Schober of the Climate Action Coalition, Maya Jared, of 350 PDX, and Paul Spindell, who's participated in numerous actions here in Portland and has been part of the Pachamama Alliance. But here in the Northwest, I mean, it just feels so heavy when we start talking about where we're going. But there have been successes, and I was wondering if maybe you guys like you're all working on a lot of the oil trains, the natural gas pipelines, stuff like that. Didn't something just happen in Longview last night, even, or a couple of days ago? Okay, tell us about that, Paul.
Well, that just happened yesterday with the Port of Commissioners for the Port of Longview rejected both an oil refinery, which would have been the first oil refinery anywhere along the Columbia River, rejected that, as well as a transport facility. From both being offered by the same company, rejected both of those. And that's huge.
And that's because
there's
guys...
yippies going on all around the Northwest when those happen, right?
And that's because there was a lot of people showing up at those meetings,
lot of people showing up, I think more so than anybody has ever expected to see at some of these events and to look at the numbers of people and the numbers of comments, the numbers of letters, and the numbers of people continuing to show up. And in many cases, driving long ways and getting there in carpools and buses to talk about what's important.
And to Tesoro Savage, that's another thing that's going on. But there have been some counties and cities that have said, we don't want it happening.
Just about everyone along the proposed rail routes that would bring oil by train into the Portland metro area to Vancouver for this proposed Tesoro Savage Vancouver Energy Project. And that would be the biggest oil by rail facility in America.
And I just like to say, I just read that each tank carries 327 metric tons of CO2 that end up in the atmosphere. And how could that possibly be a safe thing if we start looking at that much more going into the atmosphere? Well, and it's fracked gas, right?
Well, it's oil from fracking and tar sands development. Both are real bad processes. And then it comes by rail along the Columbia, which is a high-risk proposition with numerous derailments in recent history. And then it gets put on ships. The proposal is to put it on ships in Vancouver, turning Vancouver into basically an oil terminal.
An export hub. Yeah.
And it's no coincidence that the federal government recently lifted the ban on the export of crude. So I'm almost leery of getting too deep into
Tesoro Savage. Why we don't want to do it. But there are places, the city of Vancouver, the city of Portland, Multnomah County.
Hood River.
Yeah.
Camas, Washougal. I don't remember the other names, but just about all municipalities along the route have objected. The city of Vancouver itself doesn't want this. They send their lawyer and their commissioner people to these hearings, and you have to wonder who's really calling the shots. I've gone to two very well-attended hearings about Tesoro Savage's proposal up in Richfield, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people speaking, 95% plus against the terminal and the oil-by-rail proposition. And the FSEC people and other panels, they keep having these hearings, they keep talking about it, whether it's Warrington or Coos Bay for the natural gas pipelines, or this issue of the oil by rail terminal in Vancouver. And again, the overwhelming testimony on the part of citizens is against, and we still have to go back and talk to the state land board, and you have to wonder who's really calling the shots.
But it's interesting that you brought that up, because a couple years ago, there weren't hundreds and hundreds and hundreds or thousands and thousands of people showing up to these hearings. It's taken years, and it's been a concerted effort by groups working together to educate their neighbors and to show up and have events or to hold forums. And this around Tesoro Savage specifically, it's this really awesome working partnership right now between labor unions who are terrified to have these explosive fuels in their place of work, and the environmental movement, who's terrified to have the spills and the threat to salmon runs and the threat to the climate. And so right now, the goals of these two groups in Portland and Vancouver are aligned, and it's been this long process of people showing up to the meetings to decide how are we going to message this so that our politicians are paying attention, so that our municipalities do have the possibility to vote against these projects, so that our first responders know the risks that they're facing. And then all these sort of other groups, the first responders, the municipalities, now they're showing up. And now we see it like on a national scale. We're breaking records of the number of people that are showing up to hearings because of the energy that, you know, activists have been putting into this fight.
So you're sort of saying that as people show up, it sort of snowballs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of times we call it the, you know, talk about that term, the great turning, that we're turning the tide. And just recently I was hearing that with the Tesoro Savage in Vancouver, that the governor's office for the state of Washington has never received so many comments on any issue.
Including mine.
As they have. There you go. See, good. Keep that up. You know, as they have for any issue. And we have to keep that up. It can't be a show up at one hearing and then don't show up, right? But show up at all the hearings and to go to all those and to send letters and to keep sending letters. Candidly, one of the things I did this morning was I sent the commissioners for the Port of Longview a thank you letter. Because I thought that was a different energy that, you know, a lot of times we're there saying, hey, you guys are crazy to even be considering this, but hey, let's acknowledge you for making some really good decisions. Keep it up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We seem to be reaching a cultural tipping point. Where this isn't a fringe thing anymore. And when you can get 400 people late at night to turn up to a hearing, that indicates that something has shifted. And it's happening again and again. And I think that's what it's going to take, is a thorough cultural change, a change of course, and not just a minor change. It's going to be a significant change of course to revamp how we do economy, how we do energy.
Right.
It's not just shutting down an oil terminal, but what do we do instead?
Well, it's sort of like, again, it's the whole Naomi Klein, this changes everything. And what you were talking about with climate justice, it's like the whole economic system has to change. And a lot of people actually at that point start talking about, we kind of have a problem with capitalism. Because if it's just about making money, then we just start jamming these things through, even though people don't want them.
No, I heard that just yesterday at the Port of Vancouver commissioner's hearing yesterday about other matters, but we got to testify about Tesoro Savage. And they had, a fellow who's been a lifelong career captain, pilot on the river, very knowledgeable, and he spoke about the dredging project that was done in recent years to make the Columbia more navigable. And his entire presentation, it was very, very well done. He knows what he's talking about, but it was all in terms of metric tons of freight hauled and millions of dollars of revenue. And frankly, he was a bit dismissive about people who didn't like the dredging. But he didn't even have the bandwidth to, frankly, imagine the impacts on salmon and other species and the damage to the environment that you can do when you dredge a river. So what we need and where we're headed is to add those concerns. I mean, all these suits in a room talking to each other about policy,
right?
Only talking about numbers of dollars. And that's got to change.
Right.
You know, interestingly, I was 2 weeks ago, I was at the Port of Vancouver commission hearing and I testified there. As I was sitting in the room, they had their mission and their vision posted up on the walls where you behind the commissioners. And as I read those, I noticed that in three different places on those two charts, they talked about economic development.
It's and, always jobs.
And at no place did they talk about community or environment or climate justice or anything. And I told them, I said, so when I testified, I said, if this is your mission and your vision, choice is simple. Sign on and build the darn thing and do it, right? Yeah. But if you have any concern, they just had a principal from the local elementary school in giving them an award for some, you know, and they were giving the school an award. And I said, why are you giving the school an award if you're going to bring all sorts of trains through here that could blow that school up? But you don't have anything about the school on here in relation to community, in relation to your mission and your vision.
Right.
And we got to shift from that total economic model that that doesn't include that.
This changes everything.
This changes.
This really changes everything. Yeah. But sort of like what we're talking about in a way, though, is that that people do know what's going on. You know, people and we're talking about we want a snowball effect. We want more. But there are still people who are stuck on the sidelines. They kind of go into ostrich mode. And what do you think that's about?
Yeah. So in 2013, so just a couple years ago, there was a poll of like 4,000 Oregonians. And 3/4, 72%, if you are a numbers person, here are the numbers. 72% of Oregonians said that climate change requires us to change our way of life.
Yeah.
72%. And that includes, you know, other areas besides Portland Metro. So people are aware, they know we need to do things, and it's really hard to take those first actions, right? That's, I mean, I only say that because where are those actions? And so it must be hard for those 72% of people. We don't have 3/4 of Oregon.
Banging down the doors.
Banging down the doors. And demanding from, you know, the institutions that hold power right now what it's going to take to move forward.
Well, do you think some of this just might be a general sense of hopelessness? Like, or... I mean, there's things that come to my mind are it's just too much, or I can't decide what to do, or other people can do it, or, you know, there's these kinds of rationales for.
I think there's also a reluctance to look foolish. Taking action against something this big, you don't get a victory right away. And people will do almost anything. I think it was Mark Twain said, people will do almost anything to avoid appearing foolish. And I think we have to be able to put that aside and just show up, do something. I talk to my contemporaries and a number of them talk in terms of, well, I just don't know what the best thing to do is. And I haven't made much progress with them, but I try to make the point that it doesn't have to be the best thing. It just has to be something, and a better thing to do will come along. But it won't come along if you don't do something. And so there's kind of a perfectionist idea that they don't want to waste their time doing something that's not maximally effective.
That's useless. Or
and
or
what they have to do is just show up.
Yeah.
And that's those are the folks we hope we're talking to today. And later we'll have phone numbers
things
to call.
Things to do.
And things to do.
You know, it's interesting to me. Desmond Tutu said in relation to this, you know, every single one of us can do something to make a difference. You can, you can, you can, I can, mm-hmm. right? So then how do we figure out what that is? Some people don't, it's not in their wheelhouse, so to speak, to go out to a rally and to protest.
Okay. Actually, we have a caller. Sam, would you like to ask your question or make a comment?
Yes, I wondered if you could give me a resource, like a one-page survey form, so a guy could figure out his personal carbon footprint.
How about, you guys have that?
That's a really good question. I don't have a link for you off the top of my head. It's fairly easy to Google to find different calculators to find your carbon footprint. And one of the things that I also encourage listeners to think about is that there's been really strong messaging by powerful forces in this country to reduce your carbon footprint. But there's only so far that can take us. And top leaders and thinkers right now in the movement are really pushing us to take on systems that produce carbon. And so, you know, we can reduce our carbon footprint, and it's important to drive less or switch to an energy efficient car or lighting. But in reality, that's only going to take us like a couple points of a percent in the direction that we need to go. And we haven't shifted the trajectory by doing so. Those consumerist choices, like, I make them, so I think it's important. Like, I ride a bike and put a lot of energy into changing my lifestyle. But also, I think it's really important to not get too bogged down in
your own guilt.
I have a lot of guilt around my climate impact. And so if I throw all of my energy into changing out my light bulbs, but don't show up to these hearings where we have the largest oil export terminal proposed in the country is right on our river right here. If we don't show up to that fight as well, then we're losing in the long run.
Another little ID break here. I just want to tell listeners, this is and Franny, we're going to get your call next. The Recovery Zone. I'm Stephanie Potter, and we're talking today about climate change, taking action, what keeps us stuck, what can get us unstuck. Harlan Schober of the Climate Action Coalition, Maya Jared of 350PDX, and Paul Spindell of Mama Pacha. Papa Macha.
Pachamama. Pachamama means Mother Earth.
And there's a lot of actions taking place here in the Portland region. You can call in if you like. The number here is 503-231-8187. And Franny, are you still on the phone?
I am.
Great. What would you like to ask us?
Well, I just wanted to float out a theory that, I don't know if it's entirely original, but getting back a little bit to what you were talking about with why don't people do more if so many people, if quarters of the people believe that we need to do something. But the system is set up to do three things that work against us. One is to make us cynical about processes, cynical about going to, sit-ins or protests or whatever. I've heard people say a lot, well, it won't do anything anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking the hopelessness factor, yeah.
Right. And the cynicism about our institutions, like, well, they're not going to change. And then the other thing it's set up to put most of us now in a position to focus on our economic reality.
Survival.
Exactly. And then the third thing, I think, is that the system is also set up to make our attention divided. There are so many issues to focus on, and so when you have that many issues, you it's hard to get enough people focused on the one issue. So I might be focused on coal trains, but somebody else is focused on the water quality or the air quality. And I think people need to be educated that all of these things are connected.
Uh-huh.
There's an overall insidious system under which we're living, which is set up to divide us and conquer us, basically.
And Franny, for me, it was like a very positive thing to realize how close the different social justice fights are and how close they are to fighting for a better environment as well, because it meant that I could throw energy into one fight while being aware of what's going on in the other fights, but that I would make a difference in the whole structure, that I could start at any of these places. And I didn't have to, I could let go of feeling overwhelmed and that I wasn't going to be in the most effective fight. Like, I could just pick up anyone that felt good to me.
And 350PDX is very much focused on climate justice as an overarching issue with all of this, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that we need to, you know, part of the messaging as organizers and regular citizens talking to our neighbors is to connect those dots and show this is a whole web. It's, everything's connected, all these points, racial, economic, climate injustice, all of it's connected. Women's rights, every piece of it.
That's great, Franny. And how about you two? Do you have any comments on that?
I first heard the slogan climate justice when I was lucky enough to go to the People's Climate March in New York, and I guess that was 2014, and it really hit me quite directly. It was, as Maya says, it was making sense of how all the pieces fit together, and it's fits me to work on some of the issues and not on others, and that's just fine. The thing I'd urge listeners to do is when we give out phone numbers and web addresses that you make contact, you'll find things you can do. You don't have to do things you don't want to do. And it will all make sense in a way, because you can see that other people are doing the pieces you can't get to.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it's one of the reasons when, you know, we were joking about the commitment issues, right? It enables me to move from group to group to group to group, continuing to look at the events. Continuing to look at the events and actions and things that really touch my heart.
Okay, we have another caller. Anita, what would you like to say?
I would like to comment on the public hearings. They were marvelously well attended. I was at both testifying.
Yay! Good for you!
But I want people to know, particularly people in Washington who are listening to this, that Senate Bill 6224 would limit the amount of public testimony before FSEC, that is the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council.
Oh, the system fighting us again.
And Senate Bill 6527 would do similar to the Department of Ecology and the whole state environmental protection system.
Do you think these are sponsored by the Koch brothers?
Oh, well, I know that I don't know who's actually behind them, but Ann Rivers, who is the state senator for Ridgefield, is behind SB 6224. So, all of those of your listeners who are in Washington State, this is the kind of thing that people try to sneak in under the wire where nobody else, who pays any attention to what's going on in the state government? Well, we'd better. Okay, I'll hang up and take your comments off the air.
Thanks.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you. And it reminds me, one of the things certainly that relates to all of this is the move to amend and being active around energy to try and work to amend the Constitution to take personhood away from organizations and
huge.
To give back more power, rightfully so, to the individuals. And so that's an opportunity for people to get involved in that too, if that's what calls to them.
Right. And that's part of this. Oh, okay, another caller, Joe, what would you like to ask us?
Hi.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Huh?
We can hear you fine.
Okay. I think activism is wonderful, but I'd like to see it directed more toward coming up with solutions instead of protesting and whining about the problems. We need to start either manufacturing or creating alternatives. And the other major thing I'd like to see happening is we need to start making more noise about the military role in all this climate change.
I'm not going to let you off the hook on calling it whining. If you want to do something and that's your strength, get involved in the engineering side.
I am.
Good. What are you doing?
Well, we're looking at wind turbines that are going to be able to store energy. And are you with 350 PDX?
Maya is.
I am.
Okay, I plan on visiting you guys pretty soon. I'll give you a little more details. I want to.
Great. That's awesome. Right.
And I couldn't agree with you more about the need to focus some attention on the military.
Well, and
yeah, I mean that's like half of our climate change, our carbon emissions in this country, anyway.
Yeah, interestingly, the Pentagon is one of the earliest governmental agencies to come out and talk about how serious the climate change issue is.
Exactly.
But what are they doing about it?
Right. Well, I have a feeling they're doing things that are quieter, that they're not quite talking about yet. But I have hope. I have hope
if,
that
if
they'll.
If we were to take the military and turn it into a
a climate fight.
Exactly. Redeploy the military to fight climate change.
Oh, that would be incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'll be in touch soon at 350 PDX. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. And so basically, I was going to just say again, or ask another question here before we get to the last part of the show. But so what advice do you guys have for people who do want to get involved? I mean, what kinds of things would you recommend that they do? And in terms of, like, one thing you just said was there's a lot of different ways to get involved. I mean, it could be volunteering or tabling or whatever. But in terms of just doing it, what do you want to tell people?
Well, make contact with an organization, and we will list a few of them before the end of the show. But just, it works better in a group. So
being a lonely shut-in, writing your letter to the editor is...
That counts.
It counts.
You can,
right.
You can do that in concert with an organization. You can be in phone contact or email contact with a group, and they would feed you the calls that need to be made. That's an example.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of research. You can't do it all. You can't know about all the actions coming up. But there are times when phone banking is the thing to do. And there are times when calling Governor Inslee of Washington is the thing to do. We'll have his phone number for you in a minute. It doesn't require driving down to the office of 350 PDX necessarily. But getting involved with an organization will multiply your effectiveness.
Uh-huh. And how about attitudes to take? I mean, like, I don't think guilt or even anger, maybe anger helps a little, but what kind of a attitude do you feel like is the most effective to really get yourself out there?
And just bring the attitude you got and see how it changes.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. What was your name?
Lee,
and what would you like to ask?
Well, you made some comment about what the government's doing. And I'm aware that the Department of Defense, U.S. government, is funding a wood gasification plant in Lakeview to basically convert wood residue and what they consider bad trees into carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen, and they plan on putting it back together into aviation fuel, diesel fuel, and naphthalene. The aviation fuel is for, you know, basically helicopters and jet planes.
Uh-huh. So the point being then?
They are doing some very old technology that's very wasteful.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they may be getting off of petroleum, but, you know, what they're going to do is we got to watch that they're going to use the forest.
Well, it sounds like one more thing to be on top of, which sounds like a lot of what we're dealing with all of this, basically, right?
Right. And you know, it's how we get together to be effective. And I didn't know how to respond to that because, you know, I'm dealing with Department of Defense funding.
The idea of just burning more stuff... I think the change we're looking at having to make to survive is to get past burning stuff.
Totally. Any burning.
And we can burn different stuff, and it doesn't make enough difference. So,
agreed. Except that they listed biogenic fuels as exempt from CO2 emissions.
Yeah, they play games with the system.
Right.
That's why reaching a cultural tipping point, we can fight them chapter and verse on regulations and law all day long and get nowhere. If we get enough of the people behind it to where we interpret regulation and law for the purpose of solving the problem. That's the change that's going to be required. We look at the history leading up to and during World War II in the U.S., and the U.S. population wanted nothing to do with it. And the tipping point, it happened to be the event of Pearl Harbor. But once the population got behind the program, we were unstoppable. And
I would like to see a general strike.
Well, actually, yeah.
Yes.
Get 20% of the people out into the street and just stop it until it
stops.
Great.
I want to just take a moment here again to say that you're tuned to the Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. We're talking about climate change, taking action, what keeps us stuck, what can get us unstuck. Harlan Schober of the Climate Action Coalition, Maya Jarrett of 350 PDX, and Paul Spindell of Pachamama. Okay, I did it. And there's a lot of actions you can participate here in Portland region, and call us if you like at 503-231-8187. One little thought I just had is I read something about activism that people don't really get active, and I sort of remember this from being an old person in the Vietnam War, until people are dying, and that's when you really get the 72% out in the streets and stuff, and I'm just wondering if that's maybe what it's going to take, you know, and or maybe that's not true. That's kind of what I'm hoping more. I'm hoping people can just have some vision around this.
Well, people are already dying. And that's part of the linkage between climate and justice. We're turning entire areas of the United States into frontline communities, like the sad video we see out of, Nigeria, where they have oil spills and whole groups of population are unhealthy. Bhopal, yeah. In India, and it's happening here. It happens in,
I think it has to happen,
refinery towns.
Here.
It's what Vancouver is willing to do to its own citizens by turning Vancouver into an oil transit zone. You have increased disease. You have all kinds of bad outcomes, and people are dying of this already.
Okay, and then we have Frank on the phone. Craig, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, would you like to make your comment really quickly here?
Yes, I just wanted to bring up big ag and factory farming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like all of our callers so far already have a really strong understanding of what's going on. People mentioning local fights that they have, facilities that are being proposed, the need to shift to renewables ASAP, the connection between climate and big agriculture, which is a really important connection, the connection to defense and military and climate. And like, how do we turn all of that knowledge into getting people to show up in the streets? Like, that's the question that I'm dealing with. That's like what I do every day right now.
At 350 PDX.
At 350 PDX, yeah. I'm a volunteer coordinator. Like, how do we get volunteers to show up and start building these plans of how do we turn this one, you know, our 10 people who know what's going on with this proposed facility into the hundreds of thousands of people who are commenting on a proposal at Tesoro Savage? That's the question. And if you know the answer, then you should write an op-ed to your newspaper so that other people learn the answer.
Yeah, that's
for people
what we
who've never like joined a group and actually seeing the results of joining a group and gaining momentum on one of these fights or in any of these directions, it's really powerful.
I'm hearing you all say it feels really good.
It's amazing. Like, yeah. I in undergrad was expecting to leave school, become an unpaid intern somewhere, have to crawl my way up this ladder that felt really steep and difficult, and was afraid I wasn't going to be listened to, or that it would take at least 10 years to be able to use what I feel are really important insights. And plugging in with community organizing groups has let me share what I know to be true and like talk with people to get feedback on the directions that I can take and the directions that the group can take, and I'm listened to.
Yeah.
Like, in no other, you know, job or corporate internship, would I have the same, have the ears?
And there's
of
not
the
that feeling of working for the man. You're you're really doing something that you can really get behind.
Yeah.
There was, I mean, if we think back to this past summer, you know, we had the Shell No opportunity here on the river.
For people who don't know, the Shell No was
That was beautiful.
A big blockade.
The kayaktivists.
Yeah, against Shell
word.
Oil.
It was to block a large vessel from heading up to Alaska to help in the drilling of oil. And so it started out with kayaks. And what was fascinating to me was seeing how many people came down who saw it on day one and wanted to come down for day two.
Make it fun.
It was a wonderful experience, and more people came down. And then Greenpeace did their wonderful action of hanging down from the bridge. And it was great to see community of organizations, community of people coming together to rise up and say, this isn't what we want.
Right.
Now, it turned out that Shell decided not to drill. And while there might have been some economic factors that played into this and everything, I like to take some credit for that. And so do a lot of the other people. Yeah. And the smile that gives us for going and participating in stuff like that is contagious.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to keep doing. And we've had a lot of successes in the Northwest, greater Portland area with a lot of things. And so come out and play.
Well, I saw on the 350 website, 350 PDX, have fun. That's one of your recruiting tools, right?
Yeah.
So before we totally run out of time here, I want you guys to start talking about some of the groups then that you can get involved in, phone numbers, why you think these are the most important groups or not, no group is the most important. Yeah. But what struck you about these in particular? And maybe Harlan, you could...
One of the organizations locally, Columbia Riverkeeper, has been doing tremendously good work. A contact there is Dan Sears. Dan Sears at ColumbiaRiverkeeper.org.
Will you spell Dan's last name?
C-S-E-R-R-E-S. And Dan has allowed his phone number to be used here. It's 503-890-2441. 503-890-2441.
And Columbia Riverkeeper's involved in like what's going on with DeSoto Savage and I guess Warrenton.
And a lot of things to do. There's the 36-inch high pressure LNG gas line proposed to go through Warrenton past Astoria. An astoundingly bad idea.
Yeah, they were very involved in the Port of Longview as well, along the Columbia River there.
Beautiful.
And they've brought lawyers, their attorneys, to hearings. I've watched them perform superbly and just undercut the argument of various applicants.
Columbia River Keepers.
Yeah, they know their stuff.
Okay.
There's 350 PDX. A phone number for their office is 503-281-1485.
Okay, tell me some more about 350 PDX.
Well, I'm really excited because I'm from 350 PDX, so I get to talk about it. We are, the goal of 350 PDX is pulling people into the movement. People who've never been involved, who have been involved and want to try a new group. And I'm hosting a volunteer orientation this coming Saturday at the Central Library downtown from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30.
And Maya is fun.
Yeah. I agree.
And smart.
So I would love to see new faces at that. I'm really excited. I'm going to have some people who've already been volunteering but want a bigger picture of what the organization does. It'll be
nice. So where is that again, the library?
The Central Library downtown.
At what day and what time?
On Saturday, this coming Saturday, at 10:30 in the morning.
Great.
Yep.
And then another group there.
Another group, they really impressed me, is Portland Rising Tide.
Really beautiful on the climate justice.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm. And that's a spiky, they do spiky energetic stuff. I'm real impressed with them.
Spiky. I like that.
That's a technical term.
Yeah. PortlandRisingTide.org. Don't have a phone number for you there. And another group, the Portland Raging Grannies.
Yeah.
And they show up at these hearings and they sing. And
and they're also fun.
And they're fun, and it's a little bit of theater, and it goes a long way. A phone number there, a contact person is Joanna Kirchhoff. Telephone number 503-473-6093. If you like to sing, if you're a little bit of an exhibitionist, you can have a really good time doing that with the Raging Grannies. 503-473-6093.
And I think they would like to be known as Spiky, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah.
they are.
Yeah. They are Spiky. and also, it's I like doing climate organizing in Portland because there are so many groups. There's like at least 10 different groups, and they all have a slightly different style.
Right.
So, like, and we all know each other so well that I've taken calls from people and they're like, here's how I want to be involved. And I'm like, great, you would be a better fit at this other group. And
oh,
we all work
great.
Together, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I'm not losing anyone by telling
right.
someone to go to a different organization. And we come back to this, like, you can sort of plug in anywhere and we're all going to move to the same place together. So,
right.
Yeah.
And
two trainings coming up, civil disobedience trainings. Both on a Saturday, the February 27th, 10 to 4, 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. And here I'll be giving out Bonnie McKinley's phone number. If you get involved with this, you'll be running into Bonnie frequently. Telephone number for her is 503-705-1943. 503-705-1943.
And what group is this with?
I don't know exactly which group, and they're not divulging the location of the training yet, but you'll get that from Bonnie. That's Saturday, February 27th, 10 in the morning at 4 in the afternoon, and then again on March 26th from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. Call Bonnie for that.
Yeah, I don't think you have to go to both days. I think you get to pick which
yes,
one of those days
one.
You want to
right,
go to.
Right, right. Yeah. And you're part of the Climate Action Coalition. Could you tell
yes.
a little about that?
Yeah, CAC is... a coalition of these various groups.
So it's sort of like an umbrella for a lot of
yes.
the different groups.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a coalition and very effective group of working people, people working together on this. It includes 350, Rising Tide, Bike Swarm, Raging Grannies. Who else is
a
on
number
there?
Of or climate-based faith organizations, so
yes.
the chapters of a number of different churches around the city.
Yeah, in fact, I'm just going blank on all the membership there.
Right,
but,
that's fine.
One other piece to promote, of an action that needs to be done today, can be done from where you are right now.
Oh, our first action! Yay!
Yes. This has to do with the Vancouver Energy Tesoro Savage application. And it's okay that you, if you're from Portland or from Oregon, this is calling Governor Inslee of Washington State. I'm told he got something like a quarter million contacts within...
Yeah, hold on. A quarter million people have contacted the governor of
that's
Washington.
That's like 250,000.
Project.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, that's, I believe that's correct.
This is like record-breaking
yes.
in Washington's
yes.
history. This is amazing.
Wow.
So
and we're trying to get up to a million, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do it. Do
so
it.
This is one of those numbers where you call and you're just you just count. They're taking account of your opinion. It doesn't require a lot of discussion.
So you just say no on Tesoro Savage.
Yes.
Great.
You give your location. It's okay that you're from Portland. It's handy if you have one major concern. It could be safety. It could be that we've got to stop burning oil altogether, so why invest in doing more of the same?
Right.
It could be anything. But the number is 855-863-4214.
Say that's that again.
855-863-4214. And that will get counted. That call will get counted. And we're trying to sway the governor, who has the authority, to say he can stop it right then and there. And the same way our governor, Kate Brown, can stop Jordan Cove's pipeline proposal, and Governor Brown could stop the Oregon LNG proposal to go through Warrenton. All of these developments, and there's something like 28 fossil fuel programs threatening the Northwest all at one time.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah. Anyway, these are all important, but you can make that one call today.
That's great. That's great.
Operators are standing by.
Okay, we have about one more minute left. Just any 10-second thing that anybody wants to say, last words here?
I'll just say, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, I can't make it, but I'll be there in spirit. And I absolutely appreciate spirit, but we need boots on the ground.
Mm-hmm. I would say, since what got me involved in actually doing stuff was someone asking me come to a meeting, I would say pretend that you've been asked. I'm asking you, will you come to a meeting? Will you come to a hearing? And then also bring a friend.
Great, great. Well, I just want to let people know you've been listening. Harlan Schober from the Climate Action Coalition, Maya Jarrett of 350 PDX, and activist Paul Swindell of Papa Mama. Gotcha. Anyway, and they've been talking about what's motivated them to get involved in climate action. This is KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and I want to thank Judy for her fine engineering, and thank you for being a part of KBOO and getting out there.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Yay.
Thanks, Stephanie.
This week on Religion for Life, I continue my conversation with Dr. Paul Kalmonik. We're talking about the Islamic State organization and Al-Qaeda and strategies to defeat them.
What we require is strategic patience and really pinpoint a careful targeting of terrorist actors and disassociating them from Islam.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, February 24th, 2016. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson.